Tom Ross Parry, it's a Sunday.
Exactly, it is.
Let's get productive. It's Tom Matt Attack.
Interesting intro there, Matthew.
Well,
what are you trying to say?
Productive podcasting? I don't know. My head's in the shed. You all right?
I'm all right. I've been being productive, actually, today.
Yes, you have been.
I've been doing stuff for blastprocess.com. If you head over to our YouTube channel now, you will find a brand new Paris Pickups, where I talk about games I'll be talking about on this podcast,
ooh,
I imagine.
Some sexy rebranding.
And what else have we got? We got a... an unboxing video on blastprocess.com that I've done for Little Nightmares, which we're going to talk a little bit about today. It's a new release. It's last week.
We are, yeah. Should we just get into that?
We get into that? Why not? Let's not mess around, beat around the bush.
Exactly. And I mean, for our listeners, we're more entrenched in the idea of, ah, you guys should talk about retro games more. Don't worry, because it's essentially a 3D in another world. Tom, take it away.
You weren't very impressed.
No, I wasn't. Visual style of the game is quite nice. I found the controls to be very fiddly, and it's almost as if they'd taken no notes from any games made in this kind of side-scrolling adventure genre over the last 15 years.
Now, that's your opinion.
Hey, man.
My opinion would be no problems with the controls, but it could be something to do with the fact that you just started playing it partway through.
I did, yeah.
Whereas it sort of eased me into the game. And actually, one thing that I was going to say about the game is it controls rather well, actually. So there's a difference of opinion right there. I also like the fact it doesn't force a tutorial on you and only tells you the controls if you're struggling with them. And I don't think there's a lot to struggle with. Basically, you've got X button to jump. You've got circle button to light your little lighter so you can make your way around the boat you seem to be trapped upon.
Yeah.
To give a little idea of what the game looks like if you've not seen it yet. It's a little bit like Inside.
Yeah.
I'd say.
Very much so. I think Inside's control scheme is a lot more intuitive, though.
I could not remember when I was talking about this game earlier whether or not Inside had different planes of movement. Can you move in and out or not? Is it strictly on a 2D plane?
I can't really remember. Because no, it is. It's 2D, I'm sure.
Yeah, because that's what struck me about Little Nightmares. It's sort of like Inside, but you can move in and out, which was quite refreshing when I turned it on and started playing the game. And I thought, oh, right, yeah, I can move freely around this three-dimensional space.
Yeah.
And basically, it's a puzzle platform type game with stealth elements.
Yeah.
And you'll need to interact with your environment to certain things, which is why it reminds me very much of Inside. And also the tone of the game is rather bleak.
Yes.
You are a small little character, a little girl in a yellow rain jacket, who's trying to escape from this boat, it would seem. Because the thing's rocking every now and again, so I assume we're on a boat. And she's got to negotiate these environments and do these environmental puzzles to escape to freedom. Yeah. Meanwhile, there's these larger characters which seem to be after you.
Scary puppet people.
First one you meet, yes, is very much a scary puppet person with very long arms, and he can reach out and grab you.
Yes. Kind of look, the face design of it kind of reminds me a lot of the Professor from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, it's definitely got some Tim Burton influences in its tone. You can tell that the studio are probably fans of Tim Burton's animated work.
I mean, it's a Swedish studio, as we discovered.
Yeah, Tarsier,
I think. And it's probably also explains that very Scandinavian, limbo, pseudo-depressing vibe that you find in a lot of Scandinavian cinema. Tom, I don't know if we've ever talked about like, World Cinema Wednesdays.
Well, there's Lars von Trier and the Danish director.
Yeah.
But actually, it's probably more in common with the Swedish director, Ingmar Bergman. I guess if we're talking about films with a slightly depressing, isolation-type feeling.
It is a very prominent feeling, at least in the Scandinavian films you have subjected me to over the years.
Yeah. So yeah, the controls, I like them. I think they're quite straightforward. You can grab hold of objects with R2. You can crouch with L2. Light your little light to see where you're going because the environment's quite dark. With circle, X, jump, as I say, and hold down square to run.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward. You didn't like the actual having to press a button to grab hold of stuff, well, did you? It was... Well, if you were to leap, you'd expect to automatically grab
something. Yeah, I would just imagine to grab onto something.
I just think it adds an extra level of difficulty to the gameplay, which is more challenging, perhaps.
But, like, for me, that would be fine, right? If I could get my head around the whole idea of... And admittedly, like you say, maybe it's just because I jumped into it like 40 minutes in. Yeah. I've been playing another game that's a completely different experience all day. Mm. But there's something about... You were saying, hey, I really like that there's a depth in a 3D world that is missing from something like a Limbo.
Mm-hmm.
However, my counter-argument to that is... Why I died... There was a puzzle essentially you had to
depth
raise...
Depth perception.
There's no fucking sense of depth perception. I run off a platform twice. Yeah,
there is that.
Because you've got to line yourself up. Mm-hmm. And these puzzles are made to be something like Another World or Flashback or Limbo. And
I think it just makes it more challenging. I've experienced similar things in video games where you have got to be extra careful about... When everything's played in an isometric perspective like that, it's... Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a big problem with, but I can see why you'd be frustrated.
Just give me an invisible wall. That's all I ask for. Just make it so the character goes towards the edge and stammers or something, so I know, oh shit, I'm gonna die if I do this.
Maybe the reason is it would make the game too easy, because essentially it's quite... The progression through the game is fairly quick.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't, and I've heard, it isn't the most difficult video game ever. So maybe these elements are there to enhance the difficulty levels slightly. But if they're causing you frustration, then
that's not the greatest. I honestly, I love this genre. Like, Another World, Inside, and Limbo are props amongst my favourite games, especially Another World and Limbo. Yeah. I'm going to need to buy it and play a bit more of it.
Yeah. But you must admit it's very playable.
I like this.
And it's hard to put down as well, I find, at least.
I don't know. Like, I liked watching you play it.
Okay.
More than I enjoyed playing it. Like, I don't know. I from what I saw of it, the 3D depth is a new thing to it.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that game's really got going for it in terms of new ideas, even, is the aesthetic.
Yeah.
There was a bit where we... And you were like, the first thing I saw was a noose, and you were like, oh, this... game's got a very dark tone, and I was just like, yeah, really? But we jumped on this noose, we flew down like an elevator shaft, and I was like, oh, that's like exactly like the start of Another World, where you're in the phone box thing, and it blows up, and you swim up through the water,
you could call
in reverse.
It a homage.
And then you landed on the ground, and then you ran through a shower where black leeches fell from the ceiling, and if you stepped on them, they jumped onto you and like spiked through you.
Don't you think the developers are quite aware that this is a nod to...
And then 3 seconds later, you got in a cage and knocked it back and forth.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
The game does have its own original ideas.
I didn't see any of them
in
that time, other than the aesthetic and some of the cool stuff with like that big scary puppet man.
The puppet man, yeah. It's a beautiful game. And
it looks incredible, don't get me wrong.
The environments and lighting is fantastic. It also has a sort of grain effect to it, if you notice, which is something I never picked up on the videos of it that I'd seen before.
It's definitely got atmosphere, don't get me wrong. Like,
music's also very, you know, it's minimal.
Yes.
But it's like, it's creepy minimal. It's nice the way it's implemented.
Yeah, yeah.
Into the
it's just I've seen this game get a lot of nines in reviews.
I think
it's got
eights, nines, 4.7s out of fives.
I don't think it's worthy of it. The same way I don't necessarily think Inside was worthy of all the nines and tens it got.
This genre is very popular.
It is, but I mean, for me, I'm still trying to find another game that's better than Another World, and that game's almost 25 years old.
Yeah, it's a fair point you make. Maybe we haven't progressed a lot since then. Maybe it was just done so well in the first place, it's difficult to top.
Perhaps. I mean, for me, Limbo kind of gets halfway there. I think Limbo introduces some more interesting things, and obviously the consoles, like the PS3 and the Xbox 360, can obviously handle themselves a lot better than a Super Nintendo or an Amiga ever could.
Yeah.
So you have these more fast, fluid, dynamic puzzles. Like, how far did you get into Limbo? Did you ever beat it?
No, not
There's a section at the end of that game that is super bright, neck speed on everything. You're in a thing, so you're not only got to worry about a floating water level, but essentially it becomes like a Super Meat Boy level. Essentially, if you fuck up one jump, you screw up. And it's so intense. It's like, wow, this is what Another World was trying to be in certain points.
Games like Limbo and Inside, etc., and Another World, actually, very much so, have a difficulty, a certain difficulty to them from the off.
Yeah.
I think. Whereas I think Little Nightmares is far more accessible than most of these genre of games. So it might be a good place to start, but then again you have got the extra complication of the 3D depth. So
there's just something that doesn't click there for me. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I will go and buy it, I will go play it, and I will let you know next week if I ease into it, will it be fine?
Yeah.
But it's just something about that depth, man. Like something about the depth and the level of complication they've put on the controls, and I can see what they've done it. There must be puzzles later on in the game when you're jumping and you're trying to catch things or something.
And I expect there'll be a lot more moving objects around and placing them.
Yeah. But I couldn't even, like, climb faster. I was thinking, oh, well, the reason they've put this grip button on a different button is that you'll probably be able to, like, jump and climb in something like you can do in Assassin's Creed or Tomb Raider or whatever.
Okay.
And you couldn't even do that. I tried to click X and she just fell. And I was like, okay, so why have you made me jump and grip on a different button other than difficulty?
Yeah, it's interesting to note that this is the studio's first proper game.
Yes.
Other than a game that was apparently cancelled, well, seemingly cancelled, that was in development for PS3, I forget the name of it.
Yeah.
So let's see, you know, maybe their follow-up. We'll iron out a few of these little niggles. But I don't think they're huge. I think there's far more frustration in some other recent games that I've been playing.
I'm just slightly disappointed by it, that's all. Like I said, maybe it's the ramp-up, as I said a million times already. So I'll let you know next week what I think.
Okay.
Promising.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Something doesn't click with me.
It's a nice price point, though. You can buy a physical copy of the game. It's available as just in a regular edition or a special edition, which is called the 6th edition. The regular edition is about £16.
Yeah.
It's 200 kroner here in Denmark, so a little bit more expensive. PSN. I think it's the same as the physical copy, is it not?
Really?
I think it's, yeah.
I might buy a physical copy then.
Yeah, unless it's the digital copy that's 16, the physical copy is about 20.
I'll double check.
Could be. But yes, the special edition I bought here in Denmark was 300 kroner. I'm not sure of its pounds equivalent.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's meant to be a short game, reflected in its price. The special edition's got some neat things in it. It's not the highest end special edition you can get. You get stickers, poster, which is folded up, so it's not... I said this in the unboxing video, it would have been just nice to have an instruction manual. You expect whenever a special edition is done, they should include an instruction manual in it.
That's interesting. Little Nightmares is 150 kroner for a digital download.
Mm.
There is also, you can buy the soundtrack for 37 kroner, and there's like a digital edition.
Soundtrack
bundle.
Comes with the special edition as well.
However, there is also a Little Nightmares level creator kit for Little Big Planet 3.
Oh.
Which is what the studio previously worked on. I'm very curious to see if that game's engine is actually the same engine that they used for Little Big Planet, perhaps.
Yeah. That's interesting. I was always under the impression that Sumo Digital did Little Big Planet 3, but I imagine Tarsia had some hand in it as well.
Must have. Yeah. I mean,
because it's written as one of the credits that they've worked on.
But I mean, they're clearly making DLC for it. And they also apparently ported Tearaway to PS4, you said, right?
Yeah.
So,
that's right.
Makes sense. I'm going to go on How Long to Beat very quickly just to look.
Did you get a definitive answer How Long to Beat?
Exactly. Drumroll. Little Nightmares.
I was been playing, I'm just going to mention this.
3.5 hours apparently this game
3.5 hours?
Yeah.
I've been telling everybody it's 6. That's interesting.
Yes.
Again, I've been saying that 6 hours is fine for me. I don't mind shorter games. 3 hours, 3.5 hours is also not so bad.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's quite a lot. Maybe you're better to wait for a sale
perhaps
at that price.
The game I played was actually also 150 kroner and is roughly about 2.5 hours.
Oh, okay.
And that is a game called What Remains of Edith Finch.
When you think about it, though, plenty of movies cost that when they come out, and that's 2 hours.
Yep, that's true.
So I'm actually all for the idea of games being shorter, so it isn't so bad. One game I've been playing recently has been Tomb Raider.
Yes.
Definitive Edition on Xbox One. Apparently I'm up to the 6 hour mark. It's actually felt longer to me than 6 hours.
Really?
At this point. I was very enamoured with the game to begin with.
Yeah.
I think the game is astonishing visually, even though it was developed for the PS3 Xbox 360.
Yeah.
Still on the, you know, it's in its definitive edition, it's still very nice to look at. I think the controls are really good, the combat's really good. But there's a point you get to in the game where the combat overtakes everything else.
Yeah.
And it ramps up to what I thought was a finale.
Yes.
Where the helicopter, you're going to jump into the helicopter, but then the helicopter crashes.
Yes.
And you're left out there in the jungle to forest to carry on your adventure. And there's not enough interest for me now in the story to really get excited about going back to it. I will go back to it and I will finish it, as I keep saying, but it's sort of dipped for me at this point.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's a shame.
Well, how did you feel? Did you reach a point like me where you've done that massive action-based segment where you've gone and rescued your friends?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of enemies in this, and then there's a lot of stuff falling apart around you,
yeah,
and you have to escape. And it really feels like, well, this is it. This is it. I'm going to finish the game with it. Oh, okay. And I'm assuming now it's going to get back more to its roots that were established at the beginning of the game, where you were kind of surviving out there. You were hunting animals.
Yeah.
But just recently, it's been a lot of killing these generic enemies.
Yeah.
And, you know, the combat has been very intense and very full on. And it's all getting a little bit dull for me.
Yeah.
Because it's just purely combat at the minute.
I don't necessarily remember that, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay.
But to be honest with you, when I play games like that, I tend to play them very quickly, as you know.
Yeah.
And I always find myself, as they ramp up the difficulty, the game becoming more and more of a slog.
Yeah.
So I'm not perhaps the right person to ask, but to be honest with you, I can't really remember the end of that game.
I don't think it's necessarily been particularly difficult either up to this point.
Yeah.
The tomb raiding is optional, of course, you know. And tomb raiding usually involves a puzzle, mm-hmm, for example. And those puzzles are usually the same thing.
Yes.
They're not particularly interesting.
No,
puzzles.
They are generally you hanging off of something or moving something.
You're putting weights onto something else to move a platform up. It's similar, actually, to a lot of the environmental puzzles in Little Nightmares.
Yeah.
But there's something that really got me about this particular point in the game. And I think it's fair to talk about it now. It's been many years since the game came out.
Hey, man. Spoil away.
Okay. So they're about to escape.
Yeah.
Lara's in a helicopter with her mentor character.
Yes.
The older guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there's a pilot piloting. You don't know who he is. He's a nameless character. Right?
Yes.
The pilot's saying, we've got to escape. This storm, you know, we can't land in it. Lara's insisting, we've got to land. We've got to save her friends. Right? It was still down there on the ground. Right?
Yeah.
She pulls out a gun and threatens the pilot and says, we're landing now, okay? And he's like, right, fine. So they don't manage to land successfully and they crash.
Yeah.
Lara's mentor is seriously injured. He's about to die. It's a very emotional moment. Never in this whole sequence of events is the death of the pilot ever addressed.
Yeah.
And it is totally off the character of Lara. To me, at least. She's meant to be a hero type character.
Yeah.
Who considers others, yet she has just threatened this man. She's forced this man to try and land the helicopter.
Yeah.
He has died because of her insistence in saving her friends, and he's never mentioned again.
Hey, man, like, there was a debate at the time this game came out in all of the podcasts I was listening to of she has Nathan Drake syndrome. Like, them trying to be so close to Uncharted is the fact that
She murders
countless hundreds of people, and then she's like, oh God, poor me, I'm Lara. Like, there's a weird impasse between your actions as a player and your actions as Lara Croft. And then they go off the rails, even of, like, you know, it's supposed to be, this is how Lara Croft became Lara Croft.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they nearly nail it for me.
All the enemies are also very generic, and it's quite obvious where the story's going,
yeah,
too. They set up this cult, right? And there's got a cult leader who seems to be the fake bad guy, because he's not even developed in the slightest. Then you have another person that was on Lara's crew before they crashed.
Yeah.
The guy in the glasses, the one who's kind of the scientist guy, kind of leading them.
Yes.
There's two guys in glasses. This is the older guy in glasses, yeah, right?
Not the blonde dude.
The blonde dude?
Yeah.
Is it the blonde dude? The one who is obviously wanted them to come to this island and is trying to gain as much information on this culture as possible and doesn't care about...
He's using the rest
of the crew to get
this
there.
This is 159 episodes of Tom and Matt Attack.
Yeah, but, you know, it's interesting to be up to a point with this game where I was thought this was one of the greatest games ever made at one point,
yeah,
right? And now it's continued past the 6 hour mark, and I'm like, oh, this is starting to get a bit stale now. The story's showing its holes, and it's not actually that compelling anymore.
Hey, man, this is also a 4 year old game at this point. Like,
yeah,
games have moved on quite a bit.
It does make me wonder how Rise of the Tomb Raider, its sequel, is going to compare to it.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Lara doing more Lara Croft type stuff instead of slaughtering billions of generic looking cult worshippers.
Yeah.
And,
I hear you'll get it. I hear Rise of the Tomb Raider is a very good game.
Yeah, and this also is a very good game, but it's not quite as good as I initially thought it was for all the great things it does right.
Yeah.
Because I love the collecting aspect to it as well. I love the customization and upgrading Lara. And that's one of the other things that makes me keep playing. Because I always want to upgrade that weapon to the next stage and such. And you get a great sense of achievement from it. But yeah, not as good as I thought.
It's a shame.
Still good.
Yeah. But hey, man, like...
It's not Resident Evil 4, which is a game I kept comparing it to.
I can't remember anything about Tomb Raider other than certain...
So it didn't stick with you then?
Certain plot points and certain things at the time being good. And to be honest with you, like, having since played the Uncharted games... I would say the Uncharted games are a lot better than that Tomb Raider game. I think Uncharted 1, 2, and 3 came along. Tomb Raider made good on the mechanics and things that had been developed there, improved the gunplay a little bit.
Hmm.
And then Uncharted 4 for me is the pinnacle of that kind of action.
I really have
running
to play it.
Climbing
I've not
game.
Played through all the rest of them yet, which I really
a lot of people
must
would
do.
Say
like
you
did.
Hmm. But I felt a certain affinity to those characters by the end of that.
Yeah, I think that's something so. You certainly miss if you hadn't played the
previous games.
Previous games, yeah.
Yeah. Edith Finch, Tom.
Edith Finch, which is a game I keep hearing about lately that it's really good.
It's by Giant Sparrow.
Giant Sparrow.
People who did Unfinished Swan.
These are somehow related to Santa Monica Studios.
Yes, they are. They are an offshoot of Santa Monica, yeah. This is actually the first game, I believe, published by a new studio called Annapurna Interactive. And they are actually an independent film company, Annapurna. They did The Master, for example. As well as some other movies of reputable nature that I shall now list off. Zero Dark Thirty is them. Spring Breakers is them. Her is them. American Hustle is them.
Wow.
Sausage Party.
They're branching out into video games.
Yes, they are. They're a studio founded on the idea of telling very interesting stories.
And so they're working together with Giant Sparrow to release this game.
Yes, they did. Yeah. This was the first game released by Annapurna Interactive. They're working on a few other games at the moment, and I've just closed this window, so I can't tell you where it is. But I believe it was... I can't remember if it was Giant Bomb or Waypoint Radio, which is Vice's game podcast. We're interviewing the people who'd started this studio. And they're interested in making games and funding games that aren't necessarily your run-of-the-mill. This is what you would expect.
Games like Everyone's Gone to the Rapture, perhaps,
yes,
or Gone Home, or Firewatch.
Yes.
So these sort of narrative-driven, unique...
Not even necessarily that.
They
want to create new experiences, okay. Seems to be the main goal of the company. And so
the nuts are just doing walking simulators.
No, they're not.
As they unfairly have been dubbed this genre.
Well, I mean, you know, like you can take it with a pinch of salt, right? I can say that these studios trying to be incredibly interactive and like trying to drive things forward, and then their first game released is a walking studio, a walking game by an already established studio. But the first four games they have lined up are obviously What Remains of Edith Finch. There's this one called Gogoa, which is a hand-illustrated puzzle game, which is supposed to be very good. Donut Country was a game that sounded absolutely amazing, and essentially you are a giant donut and you go around in a Katamari-style fashion, and these donuts grow and grow. It's supposed to do some interesting things. And there's a game called The Artful Escape, which I actually know nothing of, but looks
artful
cool from that thumbnail. So I went into this. I was like, okay, I wasn't sure, as long-time listeners of this podcast will know, if I really wanted to play another walking simulator. I went into it thinking, well, maybe this will offer something new, because I'd seen a bit of E3 footage of that game, and it's essentially the first character you encounter in that game. Essentially, you are a character who is returning back to her family home after, God, I think it's apparently after your mother's death, so about 10 years, your mother has died since you left this family home, where all of your family have lived forever, and you've been given a key by your mum when she died, and then you go to explore this house. And you go around, and it tells you the stories of all of the members of your family that lived in this house and how they all came to very unfortunate ends.
Who were?
Some of it is... I don't know necessarily if it takes the idea of these are the deaths told by the characters who died, and it kind of takes them into artful extremes of what would have happened. But it's essentially just telling you, I shouldn't maybe say how many family members it tells you about, but it tells you a lot of these different family members, lots of different generations, starting from your great-grandfather downward until the player's own family. And every single story is different. You are walking around this house, you are exploring it in a very much a Gone Home style fashion. You are then finding things to interact with in the environment, such as opening drawers. But your grandmother seems to have, any time a family member has died, she's either collected like a shrine to them in this house, and there are things there that will give you some insight into how they died. Perhaps it's a letter, perhaps it's a journal of that character, and you then go through these really artistic extremes. The first one, for example, is one of the strangest things I've had in a game. Essentially, it's a character called Molly, and I'm not spoiling anything because this is the E3 footage that's out there. And so she was sent to bed without any food, and so you kind of wander around the room and you eat things, and she starts eating like the gerbil's food, and then she eats the toothpaste from the toothpaste tube, and then she eats holly off a branch, and then you walk over to the window and it's just like, oh, I saw a sparrow. And then she opens a window and she says, oh, I became a cat. And then so you're running up this tree as a cat chasing this bird while the character is narrating over the top, and you see it written in the world.
Are you at this point playing?
You are playing, yeah.
Yeah, you're doing these things you're describing.
Yeah. So you're running up the tree chasing these birds as first person as a cat. And then eventually you catch the bird, and then you zoom out, and then you're an owl, and then you're catching rabbits in a field, and then you become a shark, and then you're swimming through the sea, and then you become this monstrous thing, and then it
and all the while you're going, whoa, this is different.
Yeah, I was sat next to Marta, my fiance, and she was just like, what the fuck are we playing? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I honestly can't tell you what this is. That one is quite a strange example of the storytelling this game does. There are some beautifully profound segments of storytelling in that game.
Oh, I like that.
That I do
like
not want to spoil because how it delivers those stories to you in completely different ways each time is part of the charm of the game.
So not just one story, you've got a story for each family member. You think.
Yes.
Yeah. And they all kind of obviously connected to...
To the house.
To the house.
All of them have lived in this house, and this house is like... I don't even know how to describe it. It's like, if you imagined like the most Amityville horror style looking house you could, and then kind of took a bit of Howl's Moving Castle on top of it. So it's got like bits coming out a bit because they've lived in this house since the family arrived in America, and they've expanded the house to accommodate new family members.
So, yeah, initially you're controlling this Edith Finch character. As she explores the house, and then you go into each separate...
And as you go into each separate room, which...
Yeah, you get... Another experience.
Yeah, they're all through like secret passages and stuff because your mother apparently, once the family members had died, sealed the rooms with glue so you can't get in through the doors. There are people, so you can kind of look through and be like, what the fuck's going on in that
room? Makes you wonder if she's going to die.
Who knows? It's all very interesting, but I mean, like, the character is telling the story as you're going through it all.
And you've played through it too.
I played through the entire thing in one sitting, which is how I recommend you play this game.
And how long would that take?
It took me about 2.5 hours. Okay. How long to beat says about 2. And admittedly, my fiance was playing it at some point and she's not the best with 3D environments. I found out she plays games inverted. She was really struggling with the controls and I was like, hang on a sec. And I flipped it and for inverted for her. And she's like, oh yeah, shit. And then... I was like, oh, okay. Cool.
Another one.
Yeah, she was just like, is that bad? I was like, well, no. I said, that's how your brain processes how you should control a video
game.
That's
Tom
fine.
Parry plays it.
Exactly, that's literally the right way. Tom Parry's an inverted player. And then I rang a bell and showed
you
shame.
Need that in a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Inverted player.
Inverted player. Turn it upside down. Oh! Tom and Matt Attack's first t-shirt. 160.
Yeah.
In. There you go.
Downs up, ups down.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil too much of it. I'm not going to say anything more because I kind of want to say how I feel.
To me, you've said enough to arouse some interest in the.
I think you should play it. I think you should play it by next week. I don't think
it's
very long.
I gotta buy it.
It's not very long, but it's honestly
I've spent enough.
Honestly,
lately.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
Like
I'll wait for a sale. I'm not buying it. Not with the fact that I've bought so much else recently. I can't justify it. I'm afraid.
I'm gonna roll my eyes at you, Tom Patrick.
I will play it, but there's too much on at the minute, and I'd rather wait for it to be discounted.
Just like you said with Gone Home, Tom Parry.
I did get it.
You didn't play it.
Still haven't played it.
I know.
I haven't played, what's the other one? Dear Esther, either.
I haven't played Dear Esther, in all fairness to you, but there we go.
But like, I waited.
You did. And then other than that, I played, Persona 5. Really enjoying that game. Like
still,
almost 50 hours into that game. Now.
Wow, well, you're not fed up with it after 50 hours.
To be honest with you, I've just been playing it in small chunks. Like Monday night is my Persona 5 night now, so I will sit there and play a couple of hours of it.
Telling you what, if Tomb Raider went to 50 hours, I think I'd...
I really like the game. You know, I haven't really talked about it on podcast since that, like, the second time playing it.
Mm.
The story... of why I was so upset with the whole idea of, you know, like, why are they so angry at this kid?
Mm.
That is revealed, and I'm like, oh, shit. Okay, that explains a lot.
Yeah, because you thought this guy was, what was wrong
with
him?
Like,
you know, he'd
done like,
something
why,
noble, hadn't
why
he?
Why is everyone having a go at this kid for doing something noble? And that becomes apparent after about 15 hours into the game, and you're like, oh, shit, okay, I understand why this kid is the way this kid is.
Is that a spoiler?
I'll tell you off the air, but I think it will be for some people because it's still a relatively
I'm
new
never
game
play
and
it.
It's relatively long. Maybe I'll talk more in depth about a bit of the plot next week and block out a bit to talk about spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
But combat system's very good. The whole catching personas like Pokemon from Shin Megami Tensei series thing is still very intriguing to me, and still doing it and mashing the personas together to create new ones is kind of fun. Characters, every time they introduce a new character, is very good. They seem to introduce them as kind of very broadly stroked, like, kids. Of just like, oh, she's the smart one. He's the energetic but slightly dumb one. She's the pretty one who's misunderstood because she's pretty.
Stereotypes.
Yeah, but then you have the option of, like, developing your relationship with those characters, and then you see...
There's less, more depth,
less
to them,
gray to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's interesting though because you meet so many characters, and there are only so many of these bonds you can possibly form, and so you're essentially picking which characters you would like to know more about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's to encourage more replays, but I will not be replaying through this game.
Yeah, it sounds
as much as I really like it.
Yeah,
I can't spend that much time.
No, because you've got other games to play, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. And well, I mean,
what's next on your list? Because you have a couple.
Yakuza 2.
I can't wait. Before Nier.
Yakuza 2.
Yeah.
I really want to play Yakuza 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it'll be Nier Automata. Then I'll play Yakuza 3. This is the thing.
What about Yakuza 0?
Yakuza 0 I will play after I've beaten Yakuza 5. And then I will play the remake of Yakuza 1.
How much you got for your bit of hard disk space on your PS3, or are you good for that?
No, I'm going to have to buy an external hard drive. I've only got like a 12 gig hard drive.
On your PS3?
On my PS3, so I need to get another one.
And you can plug in an external hard drive
on PS3.
No,
you need to mount it into the fucking console. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah. That
yes,
joy
you
will
do.
Come later.
You do, yes. I know that, yeah.
Yeah, so fun and games. I'll eventually do it, but it won't be for a long country mile yet, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been playing a bit more of Yooka-Laylee.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm starting to see the cracks in
really?
Yooka-Laylee, actually. I'm sorry to say. It's been a great remedy to all the bleakness of Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
You know, it's been nice to play something like Yooka-Laylee that's fun and colourful compared to... Honestly, how bleak is Tomb Raider?
Yeah.
Right, and I'm sure Little Nightmares also. So, yeah, nice, colourful game. But it's not Banjo-Kazooie.
No.
And it's not on the same level of quality. It may appear like it is, you know, and design work is good, but, of course, you already see the main characters aren't quite as good, and they're sort of really just a copy of Banjo-Kazooie, and
yeah.
Their dynamic as well, it also appears like that. Gameplay has frustrated me slightly. I had some instances where the camera really was annoying.
Yeah.
And I hadn't experienced... when you have to do more complicated platforming, then the camera does become an issue. Also, the progression is a little bit difficult because I spent a lot of time doing a certain task in the game to get a pagey, equivalent of Jiggies. And then I got to the very end of it, and I could not finish it off. And I was really wondering why, and I'm thinking, perhaps it's because I haven't learned a move yet.
Yeah.
And this thing wasn't locked off to me to do. It felt like, you know, oh, I could go and do that right now. Maybe I'm just being dumb, but honestly, I think I can't do it. And I spent a lot of time getting up to the final part of it, only to find I could not continue.
I hear that is a common complaint with this game, is that is a continuous problem throughout this game.
So it's great that it's to the open world, but it doesn't seem to manage that very well. Whereas a game like Banjo-Kazooie was so much more better made than, sadly, Yooka-Laylee is. But the thing is, Yooka-Laylee, it feels like it's playing a trick on you. Here's everything you love from Banjo-Kazooie. Oh, there it all is. It's not as good as Banjo-Kazooie. And you only find that out as the more you play it, of course. I'm not saying the game's bad by any means, because there's some great stuff in it, and I'm looking forward to playing it again.
Yeah.
But those problems are bigger than I first thought.
It's a shame.
And I hope they don't get up to a point where I honestly don't want to play it anymore. So right now I'm okay. I can still go back to it, and but I'm starting to realize it's not all roses.
It's a shame.
It is a shame. I guess it did come out slightly cheaper than a lot of games, but it has become bigger than it ever was intended to be, perhaps.
Yeah.
This is also what happened with, what's it called? No Man's Sky, you know?
Yeah.
So it's to its detriment, I suppose, that it became as big as it is when it really isn't as good as you thought it would be.
No.
Hmm. Yeah, so Tomb Raider and Yooka-Laylee, I it's gone totally from in love with this game to
Hey man, Edith Finch, solid 2 hour long experience.
Yeah, maybe if Yooka-Laylee was tighter and smaller, Like Banjo-Kazooie, well, why does it have to be so big? It does actually have some nice ideas in terms of how it expands itself, because you do so much in a level, and then you get to the point you've collected so many pages, and you can expand the level. So then you pay so many pages to make the level bigger, so you can explore things you couldn't explore before.
Okay.
Or you could spend those pages to unlock another world. So either upgrade the world you're on or open another world.
Yeah.
So I think that was quite nice to have that, be able to make that decision of how you want to play it. But there we go. They're the games I've been playing mostly, just like those three. You got Little Nightmares, Ukulele, and Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
But I have also picked up a few games in this last week.
Oh, really?
Horsens again.
Yeah, boy.
We talked about this on the podcast numerous times. Horsens is a second-hand shop, which at the moment in Denmark is the best way to get PS2 games, it would seem, unless you go a flea market. And, as far as a store that you can go to, there are a few of these, what are they called, bogshoppens?
Bogshoppen, yeah.
But you don't say bog, do you, in Danish, because the G isn't...
No.
Yeah, so... Our Danish isn't the best, but these shops pop up in most places, and they do
like bug, like bookshopen.
Yeah, like that. They're basically second-hand shops, and they sell books, they sell music, they sell games, and of course they have older games.
Yeah,
bought a fair few PS2 games from there recently, which we talked about. Unfortunately, one of them didn't work, and that was Eve of Extinction. So I went back and exchanged it. I got Pitfall: The Lost Expedition.
Yes.
Which is a very competent 3D platformer. It is among the best of the PS2 platformers, I'd say. You could dismiss it at first based on its cover, its very generic character, and think this probably isn't worth playing. It's probably the budget title. A lot of work has gone into this game. It's got amazing animation, solid gameplay, great voice acting. Maybe the only thing that lets it down is its character designs.
Yeah, that character model has not aged well.
Also, some bits are really dark, which I struggled with to see what I was doing. And occasionally, when the camera moves and such, the background seemed to blur, and it was a bit off-putting. Okay. How blurry... it's a bit of motion blur on some of the graphics and such, which is a little off-putting. But it's setting up a very high production level, made by Edge of Reality, who have done... other platform games like Over the Hedge and Shark Tale. So I've not tried any of those games out, but just like a lot of other licensed platformers on the PS2, they're actually not as bad as you think. You know, you do yourself a favour and look at the developers on these games, and they can be quite fun. And it does actually stay quite close to the concept
of Pitfall.
And the first things you do is you swing on vines over pits, you know. Okay. It's at least it recognizes it's where it's come from, and includes Pitfall and Pitfall 2. These aren't available from the start, I found, so I think you have to unlock them
somehow.
But you can learn extra moves in there as well. You collect treasures throughout the levels, which you collect by moving the right stick to snatch them, which I thought was quite unique, rather than just pressing a button.
Interesting.
And those treasures you can exchange for new abilities within the game. And it's got all those tropes of the adventure type genre, like Indiana Jones. You know, you jump across crocodiles to get to other relics and such, and you climb and you swing. And it's got a real fun sense of adventure, and it's a good game, I'd say. I mean, it's not a must-have by any means, but if you enjoy action platformers... then this is a good one for PS2. The other one was Critical Depth, which is done by the Twisted Metal Studio single track, and it's basically Twisted Metal underwater. First mission I was playing as a CIA, and I was fighting the Russians underwater, trying to collect power pods or something. Yeah, deep below the surface of the ocean, 12 competing submarines have converged upon a remarkable discovery.
Oh, Jesus.
Mysterious glowing pods of incredible power.
Can it grant them any wish they want?
Origin, maybe. Lure the power-hungry sub-aqua adventurers into the darkest, most critical depths. That's the title of the game.
Okay.
Choose your submarine and play a game of cat and mouse as you try to hunt each other down and collect your power pods. So, yeah, as you say, Twisted Metal Underwater. Each level is an arena. I actually thought this game was going to be more like Star Fox, actually. I thought it was going to be an on-the-rails shooter. But of course, if I'd have realised the developer, I could have probably guessed it was going to be a little bit like Twisted Metal
Underwater. TM. Guess what the name of this podcast is going to be.
But it's got good graphics. The menus are very low resolution, which is a bit of a shame. When you play it on a big telly, you know, it just looks a bit iffy. But the actual in-game graphics are nice. Controls are actually very good. They're very competent developer single track. So I think you have the... I was having some fun with this.
That's good.
It's a bit shallow.
Yay!
But it's fun. So I thought 50 kroner, I think, this was. And it's a fairly... Oh, that's interesting. See how the sides of its bits are...
Yeah,
my case is slightly damaged.
That's a shame. Would you say it's a subpar submarine game?
It's not subpar. The case is a bit subpar at the moment, but no, it's solid, enjoyable, fun.
Better torpedo my joke, Tom.
And lastly, I picked up Blitz the League 2, my continuing journey to own a sports game of each type for every console.
Yes.
I chose NFL Blitz the League 2 for the PS3 as my NFL game of choice because... I'm not a big fan of American football. I've played Madden in the past and found it a bit too complicated.
Yeah.
So Blitz is a little bit more arcade and a bit more user-friendly. So I thought I'll go for Blitz. And it turns out this game is more interesting than I first thought. It's not actually just like the old Blitz games. It's actually got story mode and explores the darker side of pro sports on and off the field,
cool.
apparently.
Yes.
You can take performance-enhancing drugs to improve your player.
Surely not.
There is Mortal Kombat-like bone-breaking cutscenes as well.
Yeah.
You can turn on a certain power-up that lets you see the damage you're causing to the players on the field.
Wow, I bet the NHL absolutely loved that with all of like the concussion stuff that's been going on.
Certainly. This game came out a while ago. It's an earlier PS3 game, 2008. As with all earlier PS3 games, it requires a mandatory install.
Yep.
Which also manually asks you to reset the PlayStation afterwards.
Okay.
Please press the PlayStation button to reset. Which I've never experienced before. I played a little bit of the training mode because obviously I need to get up to speed with my NFL. You know, I've played a football game like this for a while. And, you know, that was fine. I was getting the grips of it, which I didn't like, which I said to you earlier, was the guy who's giving you the instructions is incredibly negative when you fail.
Yeah.
And I don't think it should be part of any video game to have a guy shouting at you, telling you you're crap after you're just trying to learn the game. You know, you're going to make mistakes.
You've never played Halo 2 online.
I have. Yeah, that would be a minor criticism, and I've yet to explore the hard-hitting story mode that this game boasts, but...
I'm trying to find there was a...
It was very cheap, so...
Yeah?
And that game, I can't recall seeing this around a lot. Well, maybe I just wasn't paying attention to it because it was a football game. But there you go. Blitz the League 2 for PS3. No idea what Blitz the League 1 is like. I don't think I've ever seen that either. But
no, me neither.
Also contains bad language and gambling.
Call blimey. There was a futuristic pseudo-American football game on the Xbox 360.
Oh, yeah.
And the name of it escapes me, and I can't find it by Googling futuristic American football game.
Sounds good, though.
Yeah. It has a similar, like, hey, take drugs and steroids and improve your player thing. It's not the first Blitz
Never
game,
been featured
else.
In a wrestling game.
No. Perhaps too close to home.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I've been playing and picking up in this last week. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe came out this week.
It did. I hear the battle mode online is very fun.
I'm sure it's doing wonders for the Switch, as is at present. That game, I think, lends itself to the console extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
Tetris Puyo Pop also came out. What's it called?
Tetris.
Puyo Pop Tetris.
Tetris. Puyo Tetris. It's just called Puyo Tetris.
Yeah. I remember some of the other Puyo games are called Puyo Pop.
Yes.
Yeah. At a certain point.
Yes. That was the GameCube, Game Boy Advance.
Xbox,
PS2, yeah.
But that visual style is still consistent.
Like that, if you look at like the Puyo Pop box, that is very like bright colours, like anime ladies and whatever. Yeah. That's kind of been a staple of the series for a long time, I think.
So, two good games there available for the Switch.
I will be picking one of them up.
What do you think at the moment about the third party releases for Switch?
Well, they're non-consistent at the moment. It's like the PS4, isn't it? Like, they will get slithers of stuff coming out for the first year and then everyone else will release it. The interesting thing to me, actually, at the moment, is the fact that Nintendo have released a 2DS XL.
Oh, that, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much the new 3DS XL without the 3D.
Yeah.
It seems to have all the same features.
Yeah.
But it's cheaper.
Yeah.
So, are they killing the 3DS XL?
Maybe.
3DS? Because, you know, the 3D hasn't been the biggest selling point of the 3DS.
No.
Even though it's its name. I can't see how many people would buy the new 3DS XL over the 2DS, new 2DS XL.
Yeah.
If it's cheaper.
I don't know. I may, if... Did you see the price of it? Do you know how much it is?
I think it's cheaper than the old one.
I'm 90% sure it's cheaper than the old one.
Which makes me think it's sort of like, this is the last hurrah for the 3DS. So winding it down, they're making a 3DS that is cheaper to produce.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Sexy looking console, some of the nice colour.
It's a nice looking console. It's not a console I'll get myself, because it's the same as I've already got.
I haven't got a new 3DS, I might do.
Oh, you might do.
If one came about at a cheap price, maybe I'd pick one up.
Nintendo did announce a few new games for the 3DS, didn't they? Yeah. Or they announced them a while ago.
Yeah, just, like Pikmin and...
Pikmin. Hey, Pikmin and Monster Hunter. We talked about these before. So, yeah, I'm still a little bit unsure about the Switch and how it's going to fare. But
this is the thing.
The more popularity it gets. But it just, right now, it feels just like the Wii U in its the rate of releases. Although the Wii U kind of continued its initial slow rate of releases through its entire... Actually, originally, it had a lot more on it, didn't it?
Yeah,
when that came out, the support for it was quite big from third parties. In comparison, the Switch actually hasn't had the same support.
Nope.
But it's because of what happened with the Wii U, I suppose.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, like people like Ubisoft and stuff are coming out the woodworks now going, hey, we're going to release a game for this.
Yeah, it doesn't mean to say that it won't go the other way and the Switch will eventually have a lot more games being released for it than the Wii U ever did, which is probably where it's going to go. But at the minute, it just seems a little bit like, yeah, we're all waiting for the next Nintendo title, as it was all the way through the Wii U's lifespan.
Hey, man, like next month, you've got ARMS. After you've got Splatoon 2, like don't count it out yet. Like it's going to be consistent with Nintendo titles for a little while. And then hopefully around E3 we'll find out, hey, there's a lot of third-party stuff coming. It seems easier to port to than the previous consoles.
I am interested to see what else they're going to announce for it. Because I still haven't found the game to make me want to buy one yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll Mario, as we've said before.
And I'll be out towards Christmas.
Like to see more of Mario, for sure.
It'll definitely be at E3. Okay, Doug. I guess we should wrap this up, my good sir. Okay, if you want to get in contact with us, you can do so in the regular places. You can go to facebook.com/TomOnThatAttack. You can go to Twitter at TMAcast. You can also go to blastprocess.com. You can go to TomOnThatAttack.com/podcast. You don't even need to type /podcast anymore. You haven't had to for a long time.
No.
I keep saying it, though, because it's fun. You pretty much find us wherever. Tom's on Twitter at TomParry11. I'm there at GameBoyle.
Blast Process is on Twitter.
That's Blast Process.
And now Instagram as well.
Cool, blimey. You've been busy.
Also, you can see the podcast on YouTube now, if that's your preferred method.
It's
available.
Indeed.
Slightly later than the other versions of the podcast.
Yeah. But so it goes.
Yeah.
And then if you would like to listen to it in another medium, such as in the iTunes, why not give us a cheeky rate and subscribe while you're there? Let us know you're enjoying the content and that you're listening. Okay, Tom, let's wrap this up. Until next week, everybody, game on.
Game on.